tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with Tony Award winner, Drama Desk Award winner, star of stage and screen, both movies and TV, internationally known and beloved performer, Ben Vereen. Ben is here in Florida, having directed his reimagined version of the iconic musical Hair for the Venice Theater in Venice, Florida. When Hair first opened, it had a profound effect on audiences of its time, and it's Ben's hope that his new reimagined version will have a profound effect on our audiences. He hopes that seeing this new version will remind us that it is better to make love than war. Hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice, oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive.
About being who you really are. Not the person you think you're supposed to be, or you wish you were. Not the person someone told you you had to be. Not the person someone else is. Not the person you think you have to be in order to be loved. But the person that you really are. Maybe you're thinking, how can I be other than who I really am? But as a therapist, I see every day people who I believe are in denial for really important aspects of their person. That is, in their childhood, someone let them know that something about them, some of their behavior, some of the way they talk, their interests, their curiosities, their natural inclinations, were not okay. Something about them brought a consequence, a reaction, that they really didn't want. Perhaps they were teased or neglected or even punished or ostracized for some way that they were. Well, we're very flexible as children, and we really can't afford not to be loved, not to be appreciated, not to be accepted. And so spontaneously we begin to try and pretend we're not this thing that is bringing this consequence that we really don't want. We pretend until we get so good at pretending that we actually forget. We forget that we have a spontaneous sense of humor. We forget that we're curious about insects. We forget that we really love to dance. We forget something that was integral to us, something that was essential to us. And although you can survive without these things, you can't enjoy your life without them. And the Lin Show is about saying that if you think this happened to you, if you think it's possible that there was something that you were or something that you wanted to be that you somehow lost, forgot about, or are currently in denial for, the Lin Show is about saying it may not be too late to recover, to get back what you lost. Because it's not only so much more satisfying to live a life where you are yourself, it frees up so much energy, because it takes energy to suppress. And even though you're not in touch with those qualities anymore, they're not gone, and you are using energy to suppress them. I call the version that we're acting out our cover story. It's like spies have a cover story. You know, if it is discovered who they really are, they'll be in danger. And that's how it seems to me we are. That we use our cover stories to protect ourselves from exposing something about us which will put us in some kind of danger. The danger of not being liked, appreciated, valued, loved. So, if you think that you might have left something behind that you'd like to get back, and you'd like to talk to me about that, you can find me at my website, thelynshow.com, thelynshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. And up there on my website, you can click on the email tab and ask me any question. I will be happy to answer you. You can get me to come talk to your group or organization. And you can listen to all my shows and all my interviews, including the one I'm about to air today. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I do that because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And my interviewee today, Ben Vereen, is a man who is very much who he really is. When you listen to Ben, you hear a man speaking from his deepest self. He's not pretending to be somebody other than he is. He is the man he always was, the man he was meant to be. And as such, is absolutely fascinating to listen to. In this show, I'm going to play my interview with Ben. I'm going to read Sharon Leslie's review and play several songs from the show. I'm going to start off with one of the hits from the show, Aquarius, followed by Ben's interview. So here now, Aquarius and the very special Ben Vereen.
When the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter
moon.
I'm here with Ben Vereen, and Ben is here reimagining hair for the Venice Theater, and I'm explaining to Ben that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. It's glaringly apparent that you have made your life and your living with the art. What would you say? Theater? Acting? Dancing?
Service
to the arts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Most people know you as a performer, would you say?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I only ask one question, and it is, do you remember, can you tell me, the very first moment in your life when it occurred to you, performing, singing, dancing, being looked at, telling stories, any of that?
It goes so far back, 50 years or so back, maybe 60 years. I guess, you know, my godmother, Mary Eddy, started me singing in church, and then, of course, there was a dance school later.
Wait. How old were you when you were singing in church?
Oh, I was about 5 or 6.
5 or 6. Yeah. Is that because you were singing already?
No, I don't know. Mom might call her Mama Mary. Mm-hmm. You know, just grabbed me off the street and brought me to church, and she taught me a couple of songs and had me sing for the congregation. And I enjoyed that. I think there was something inside of it sparked. And then, of course, you know, being at home, you know, and putting on record players, and we had record players, and putting on, you know, 78s in those days, and dancing around the house, you know. And
okay, so we're talking still about very young.
Yes, very young age. You know, but the thing about, you know, young children, I even notice my grandchildren and my children, as I, you know, I've raised, is that they have an innate ability to express themselves through music, through dance. It's almost an innate rhythm of life.
Yes.
That we attach ourselves to, and you can watch it in the children. A child will crawl, then they'll roll, and you put on music, and all of a sudden they'll start to move or try to sing. And when that is encouraged and allowed itself to express in a growing form, it becomes an art form in their life, if we're lucky. Or they use that art to express other parts of life. Be doctoring, whether it be janitoring, or you know, or owning a grocery store. It's still an art form. So, but for me, it was the singing, it was the performing arts.
So you started singing very early to records
just,
in the church.
Yeah, just, you know, just then was recognized, I guess, when I got into junior high school. Although I was still doing it. I was doing it. My mother had me going around to, there was a gentleman who put on shows in hospitals, and she signed me up for that. And I'd make up my own dances and go and dance with the people in the hospitals and you know, various churches. You know, we'd have church programs.
So very early, you were attracted to this, compelled by it, drawn to it.
It was innate.
It was part of you, right? You came in with it,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we all come in with it. It takes on various forms. For you,
yeah.
It takes on a form. I'm sure that before this, you were doing something other art form in your life, because life itself is an art form.
Okay, so but you were encouraged, right, by Mama Mary and by your mother, right, to continue to do it.
And also by the public.
And by the way, because like
because
people
like,
liked it.
Like,
yeah.
Like it, you know, you little ham and you comes out. Okay, you know what it's
yeah,
like.
I do. So do you remember? Clearly, I can see it on your face. You remember what that felt like to do even when you were very young.
I still remember.
Yes.
And I go for it. I strive for it every time. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Every time. Because it's something that I try and instill to my students and my cast members. Something you never want to get jaded with. It's an openness to be touched, an openness of curiosity, of wanting to serve, wanting to give.
Yes. Okay, so in junior high school, something happened. You said...
A couple of things happened. One, I was asked to go to a slower school because I was trying to entertain the auditorium. And my principal came in and said, you know, we think you should go to a slower school. But that was a blessing because the school they put me in, I was in classes with, you know, like, gangsters, right? And I was this young kid who was, you know, singing, trying to sing and dance, and there was these guys who, you know, used to going around breaking heads out of school. And my teacher, Mr. Hill, saw me, and he pointed, I believe in divine destiny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said, I want you to do a production, keep doing the production of King and I. and I want you to be the interpreter. I'd never seen a Broadway show, didn't know what an interpreter was, but there I was in the Brooklyn Academy of Music with a full orchestra, all black orchestra, and costumes and the whole nine yards, and the production of The King and I. And I was, what, 12, 11 years old.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
I was crawling around the stage making up this character. I just innately made up this character. And I'd sit in the wings night after night and watch every, I knew every word that everyone sang or spoke on. I knew the play.
Yeah.
And when it was over, it was just for like a weekend or two with rehearsals. I couldn't wait. I remember I couldn't wait to get to rehearsals and sit there and watch what was going on. And I made up a dance to, a puzzlement by the king, King Calhoun, and my principal saw it, and he suggested I go to the high school for the performing arts.
Wait a minute. So first they tell you you shouldn't be in this regular school, right? Mm-hmm. And they move you into this school with headbangers. Mm-hmm. But somebody in the school of headbangers mm-hmm. sees something in you mm-hmm. and puts you on the Brooklyn Academy of Music stage. Mm-hmm. And you know right then that that's what you want? No?
No, because I wanted to go into military school.
Really?
Yeah, I wanted to go into aviation.
Oh my
gosh.
There
was a high school aviation in Brooklyn. I wanted to go to be in aviation. I wanted to be in the military. He felt it was been a waste of...
The principal of the school
yeah.
says, no, you should go to...
Yeah, he said you should go to performing arts. And that's when I met Dr. Rachel Yoakum, and the rest is history. That's when my passion began to click in.
I want you to describe the history. Mm-hmm. So you go to the School of Performing Arts, mm-hmm. right? Now, how old are you now?
Oh, I was 14, 15.
14, right. And I'm not sure, I don't know this. Who did you meet?
Dr. Rachel Yoakum. She was the principal of the dance department.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to the audition and saw for the first time people that looked like they were from another planet. You know, kids from the arts.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They wore leotards and tights and spoke differently from my neighborhood. And they had a purpose. They had a direction that they wanted to go and pursue. And in my neighborhood, you know, you live day by day, you know, which is good. You know, we didn't think about, at least in my home, we didn't think about that type of aspirations to do, you know, be on the stage and that sort of thing. And these kids had dreams of being on stage or in concerts or producing or records or the nine yards. And you know, kids were flying in from all over the world to go to this school. And we only allowed 600, I think, at the time. And if that many, not even that many. And it was like the movie Fame, you know. It was really a takeoff from that. We did have dance at lunchtime. We did have, except we didn't go into the streets, but we had a lunchroom. We had Gopa, and there was a guy named Glenn Turman, who was an actor today. He does this wonderful work. He was the guy who was running the, spinning the records, and we would dance. And it was wonderful. It was wonderful. I had some great teachers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My teacher was one of Martha Graham's proteges named David Woods. I had Norman Walker for modern dance. I had Dr. Polinsky Novosky. He was a character dancer and Malinka, modern ballet. And it was a turning point in my life because I knew nothing of this world.
So now, did you have to audition?
Yes.
And you didn't have any training?
No.
So you just did what came naturally, and they said, yes, we see something in this boy, and we'll take him?
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Yoakum was responsible for that, because I clearly did bad at the audition. And she said to give him a chance.
Really?
Yeah.
Boy, it does sound like destiny,
well,
doesn't it?
Yeah, well, Dr. Yoakum, she stayed with me my entire life until she made her transition about 7-8 years ago.
So she recognized you in some important way.
Yes, she saw too that I got a degree at university at Tucson, in Tucson, University of Tucson, University of Arizona, U of A, University.
So she, well, what it sounds like is that people saw you all along. I mean, Mother Mary put you in the church, right? Your mother put you in the hospitals, and then you're in this headbanging school, and somebody sees you and puts you.
It's interesting. I'm listening to you talk, but I think that everybody has, as I said, a divine destiny. mine is for people to, you're writing about me, because my path is, has been so that I could be a reflection for those who are living in life. Hopefully they will say, ah, I can do that too.
Yes.
So your mission has been to bring out the truth or bring out that light so
yes.
others can see. But I believe that everybody, you know, all life is significant to me and very important to me. And no matter where you end up in life, it's your choice. You know, it is a, you know, say, well, society got me down, but we have a mental capacity to choose. We can choose to make it either color glasses half full or half empty, you know. And so, you know, some of us choose to look at this, it's half empty, and we're going to fill in the rest of the glass. Some say, well, it's half empty, and or half full, half empty, so I'm just going to deal with it. I'm going to stay here and just deal with it, you know.
Right. But you did have a lot of Deus ex machina, kind of, you know, coming down and saying, well, him, you know.
Yeah, you know. But as I was going to say, you know, we all have that, but mine just takes on this path.
I understand, and I'm not diminishing that at all.
No,
I just
no,
think
no,
it's so interesting,
no,
you know.
No, no, it is, and I'm grateful that I have been touched in order to touch others.
Yes, and it seems to me that, you know, what you were talking about singing in church, for, you know, so early singing in churches, singing in hospitals, that from the very beginning, it seemed to be your place to be serving, you know, to be using your talent to serve. So you went to the University of Arizona.
I didn't go there. I was given, I'm still associated with them, you know.
Yeah. Oh, so you didn't go to college?
I didn't go. No, I received an honorary degree from the college.
Well, congratulations.
I have many degrees.
The many-degreed Ben Vereen, right? Okay, so you come out of the, you know, out of school, so what happens?
I get kind of show business. Prodigal Son with Langston Hughes, directed by Vinette Carroll, and then ended up in Summer Stock. A guy named Ray Cooper hired me for Summer Stock, and I did...
So did you just start auditioning immediately?
Yes.
Or?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
it wasn't always show after show after show. You know, there were times that I worked in the mail rooms, and times I worked as a waiter, times I worked as where I could, you know, as a messenger, you know, on Wall Street. You know, you do what you have to do, but
yeah.
you keep hitting it. You keep going after, and then one day it hits.
And for you it was?
Yeah. You know, it's still, you know, I still go after it. You know, you don't give up on it. Say, oh, I made it. No, you never made it. You're making it.
Yes.
And so, you know, things just have begun to happen. And I met some great people along the way, you know. As I said, Langston Hughes, Vinette Carroll, people like that. You know, Bob Fosse, Tom O'Horgan, you know, Ron Fields, you know, then, you know, Sammy Davis, Terry Lewis. And the list goes on and on and on and on and on and on. You know, Cab Calloway, my God, Cab Calloway. Duke Ellington, these are people I've met and sat in a room with. Billy Eckstein, you know, I've sat in a room with these people. Lena Horne,
yeah,
my
wow.
God,
yeah.
You know, I've sat in a room with the Nicholas Brothers, you know, Gregory Hines, and the list goes on and on and on. Princess Di. I have been so blessed in my journey. I'm glad that finger pointed to me. You
yes.
know, and that, you know, that white fellow who was walking down the street that day in Brooklyn and said, that kid, you know, she sent him to dance school and said, take him. You know?
That's right.
And it's been a wonderful journey. I have, it just opens. Alex Haley, my God, Alex Haley, you know?
Yes. It does.
Sidney Poitier, Liza Minnelli, my buddy, you know? My buddy, Chita Rivera, my buddy, you know, Shirley MacLaine, my buddies. Yeah, I can, Frank Sinatra, I sat at a table with Frank Sinatra. He called me friend, you know, he said, hey, it's my friend Ben. Don't mess with him. You know, so I knew Jilly. My God. You know, the list goes on and on. Al Prince, the list goes on and on, you know.
Yes, I
Stephen
do.
Stephen Schwartz, it goes on. Stu Ostrow, this goes on. I got to write a book.
I think you should. Have you not thought of it?
I've thought of it. People have been prodding me to do it.
I'm sure they have.
You know, but
well, it's another way of serving, isn't it?
It is. And my book is pretty much about, you know, not about biography, about me, but it's about life itself, about us, you know. And like you say, you know, that finger that points.
Yes, and I do think, but I think not everybody says yes when the finger points.
No, because they don't see, because we get wrapped up in ourselves. I was listening to my friend Joel Osteen, he was there talking about the how our life is like being in a car, mm-hmm. and sometimes you notice the window is broad, and the rearview mirror is small, and a lot of us get stuck looking in the rearview mirror,
yeah.
instead of looking at the broadness of our future. And it's very true.
Uh-huh.
It's very true. And we miss out on what's in front of us. Because you know, we're busy looking at our past. And what did I do wrong? Why can't I fix that? You can't do anything about it. Live now, today. It's done. It's finished. It's over with. But the sin, if there's a sin, the sin is not living your life in the present.
I couldn't agree more. The theme of the show is being who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
And it is my understanding that lots of people are not. And the reason that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art is because they, when you listen to people like you, you hear what it sounds like to be who you really are, to have embraced who you really are, and to continue to embrace who you really are, which is what you're doing, right?
I am on a daily basis. Sometimes I miss the mark. And the idea is when you miss the mark, or when I miss the mark, is not to wallow in the miss. Some people have a tendency to miss the mark and they wallow in it, make a career move out of it. Instead of getting up out of it and stepping on into life and saying, okay, I made a mistake, I missed the mark, okay, let me keep going forward. You see, that's the definition of a sin, missing the mark.
Well, or staying stuck in it, right?
Yeah. Staying stuck in it. Either
right.
way, you know,
right.
You miss the mark, you stay stuck there, and life goes, but then you're going to have pity, you're getting that pity party, oh, me. And then what happens is you begin to draw people into the same like mind, and you begin to fall deeper and deeper into it. Because if you tell the universe, oh, poor me, the universe, why am I doing it? The universe gives you exactly as to why, and you go, okay, yeah, and you wallow that, instead of how can I get out of this, how can I serve, how can I blossom, how can I, then the universe says, oh, we could do this, you could do that, let me send you the angels to help you with that.
Do you know where you got this? Because I know you...
knocked down enough times.
What?
You get knocked down enough times, you go like, okay, how do I get up? A friend of mine said, when you're knocked down, you fall on your back, and he says, you're getting up, you're looking up, get up.
You know the joke about the guy who wants to win the lottery, and he keeps praying to God, let me win the lottery. Come on, I need it so badly. You need, please, let me win the lottery. And then one day God says to him, give me a break,
yeah,
buy a ticket,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
And then,
exactly. Mm-hmm. It's the same story as the guy who prays he wants to get up in life and get ready. He prays God, help me. Then he gets up and gets back in bed. You know, that's the same thing with people, you know?
Yes.
Help me. They get up and get back in bed. God says, give me a paper, buy a newspaper.
Yeah, right.
Same story. You know?
Okay, so I know you know that maybe even most people don't have this thing, this ability to continue to try, to go for, I mean, come on, what happened to you is against the conventional wisdom. It did happen for you, and not only did it happen for you, but you continue to aim for it, go for it, you know, move forward, right? So do you have any idea where that quality of being willing to continue to try in you comes from?
I often say it's something greater than myself.
You do?
Of course, it's something greater than myself. Because of myself, I would be in Fiji or somewhere, you know, just hanging out on a beach. But there's something within me that's greater than myself. And that reaches for the goal.
Wow, through you?
Through me. Through all of us.
But again, not everybody...
Not everybody listens to it. They get them laid back down. But, you know, some people get into a rut. They stay in that day and they feel they're going around and around and around in that rut. But that rut is really your consciousness of how you think about things. It could be a mundane job. You say, it's my mundane job, but my greater good is using this to propel me into something else.
Yes.
Whether I keep this job and staying here, where I do not particularly like. But there's something greater within me that's doing something through this situation.
So believing that whatever's happening,
whatever's happening, this has come for my higher good.
Right. So
Wow. Not for my defeat, but for my higher good.
Yes.
So instead, a setback is a step up. It's not a setback, it's a step up. Stepping stone, step up.
It's lovely.
Yeah, so yeah. It's all a philosophy, isn't it? It's all a way you think about things.
You know? I'm sure it is.
Half half cup, half full, half empty. I tell the story of the Indian chief who tells his son, when you leave home, my son, there'll be two wolves inside of you fighting every day of your life. One is a wolf of good, the other is a wolf of bad. And the son says, well, father, which one wins? He says, the one that you feed.
Yes.
So if you feed the good, good will come your way.
Yeah.
And I try and feed goodness inside of myself on a daily basis. No matter what, I am humanly, because the human factor has its own angst. Whatever I'm going through, what my vision sees, it tells me I can't. Spiritually, I know it doesn't exist. Only the good exists.
This is so lovely. It's inspiring. Mm-hmm. And it is something that everybody needs to hear.
Thank you. I need it myself. I listen to people to help me, encourage me sometimes.
Well, never mind. I'm going to send you this interview so you can listen to yourself say it whenever you need it. You can know that it's coming through you and back to you. So you want to talk a little bit about hair and what you're doing here?
Hair, I'm reimagining it because it's been done. Been done time and time again. But I'm using it this time to ask a question. What have we done? And the other question is, what are we going to do about it? Hair, as I feel, is a perfect vehicle, and I'm grateful to the writers, and to, of course, I dedicate the show to Tom O'Horgan, who's one of my mentors, who, as a matter of fact, lived here in Venice, and Sarasota area. He lived down here, and as a matter of fact, he made his transition here. And Tom O'Horgan is probably one of the greatest Renaissance manners of the theater. He single-handedly changed the theater, of course he got in trouble for it, and he couldn't get arrested in his latter days for to direct anything, but... Changed the theater. He broke the fourth wall, and he just brought a whole different face to the theater. He was so innovative. He was just amazing. Jesus Christ Superstar, Hair, Inner City, Mother Goose, Liddy, the list goes on. He gave us so much. And he was one of my mentors when I first met Tom, was at the audition at the Biltmore Theater for Hair, going to Los Angeles. And he stood behind me and he watched me and he hired me. And he was to be with Tom, and then he hired me to do the New York Jesus Christ Superstar. Then he hired me to go on tour at his repertory company where we did a Sam Shepard play. We did a medieval play and we traveled around the world. It's called The New Troupe. Which is really far out. Such a great experience. And so I dedicate this show to him and also to my friend Michael Butler, who was one of the first producers, and of course in memory of Jerry Ragney, Jim Rado wrote the show and called me to it. I've taken this show and using the words, is it the show, what do you expect the hair to be, but take it a little bit further beyond. We're using media. And as I said, I'm trying to show you where we were, mm-hmm. what was going on then, and what's going on now.
Which is so similar.
So similar, if not worse.
Yes, right.
And the question is to our generation, while I'm older than you are, is that we promised the young people that we were going to make this world a better place. We were in the streets protesting, getting bombed and getting... tear gassed and screaming against the war, screaming about injustice, screaming about the rights of all people, black, white, gay, lesbian, whatever, that, God's people will have a voice upon the planet. And, we often go to church and talk about heaven, talk about going to heaven, we talk about bringing heaven to earth. That was our philosophy, I believe. And so I look around the planet right now and And I turn on the news and I am so horrified what's going on. It's a travesty. It's just beyond me. And when Murray Chase asked me did I want to do hair, and I told him, told him the vision, and he said, let's do it. And I thought it was so brave. And so now we're doing it. And my want is that people hear the message. And I don't know, I don't expect that we can change the world from here in Venice, at the Venice Theater by doing this production, but maybe we'll touch one person. And that one person will have enough a voice that they'll say something to somebody else and eventually it'll get out. My want is to take this particular production on tour from Venice, and we call it From Venice with Love Hair, and travel around to colleges, you met Pamela, my business partner and manager. We'd like to put it in a tent and do the production there in a tent from here. What you'll see is just going to be an idea of it, of where we'd like to take
it. It's a stage on the, right?
Yeah, this stage we're doing right this period right here has been the laboratory.
Yes,
And then once the laboratory is okay, then we can put out the formula.
Yeah. It's very exciting.
It is an exciting period of time. These kids have worked tremendously hard and have gone through a lot because my rehearsal process is not your normal process. It has a lot to do with a lot of inner work. And I hope they probably think of it. I'm not a therapist. And I hope they don't think I'm a therapist. I'm not. And they got to go to a therapist person. But we deal with the inner. I believe that an actor has to unveil that which is inside of them to express that what is. And using the words of the author, but come from a place of knowing inside of themselves what they're saying. So that the word becomes real, not only to the audience, but to them.
To them, yes.
And so therefore it's real to the audience.
Yeah. So, you know, I meant to ask you, did you study acting? Where did you learn this? Yeah, right.
I've been with so many people, and I've learned from them. And, of course, I had great teachers like Otava Oregon. I had Bob Fosse.
Yeah, you had directors.
Directors. But my first teacher was a guy named Oscar Brown Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a singer, jazz singer. And I went to this bar, and there was Oscar Brown by himself, and I walked in, and he said, "Sweep the floor," something like out of that kung fu movie with the kid, the Karate Kid, the Four Karate Kid. He walked in, he said, "Sweep the floor," and I went to get a broom. He said, "No, sweep the floor."
Wow.
And then he showed me how to do it without a broom.
Wow.
He told me about imagination, about the inner being. Oscar Brown Jr., jazz singer and director.
Oh, you have had a time, haven't you?
I have had some wonderful people. You know, watching Vinette Carroll, my first production. She worked with the actors. Oh, Vinette was wonderful.
Oh.
Vinette was a match. She was a school teacher. She was a teacher in performing arts.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Vinette Carroll.
Yes, I know.
Come here, darling.
She was a presence.
She was a presence.
And so are you.
Thank you.
You have spent a life doing this work in one way or another. So would you say something about what that's like?
It's wonderful. Having, and I thank my public for allowing me the opportunity to do this, because had they not accepted me, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you today. A lot of actors have wanted to come along this way, but because of not having encouragement and not being accepted or whatever, fell by the wayside instead of staying with it and working with it. But my public comes out to see me. They buy tickets to see my show that I'm putting on here. They come to my concerts. They go to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
They have made this a wonderful journey. I tell my students, be courteous to your public. It is important. I once did a show with a young lady, and after the show, she would shun the public. And I said, that child who was so enamored by you, and when you walked out the stage door, you walked by her, scarred her for life.
Mm.
Her parents will remember that.
Yes.
And well, they'll tell their neighbors about that. And your CDs will begin to go down. Mm. So, it's the public. You make or break us. And I tell my students that. When you finish doing your job, which they've hired you to do, to your public, always be courteous, always be grateful. Because they're the ones that make us.
I think this is self-evident, what I'm going to say.
Yes.
But I'll say it anyway. People don't come out, support, continue to show up, unless they're getting something that they value.
like, for example?
Your performances.
Yeah.
Getting something of value from you. That's why they
Thank
do
you.
It.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. And that's what I believe. I'm trying to teach my cast. It's not about the show, it's about your life. It's showing up for life. Showing up 100%. Public comes to the theater, they don't care about what your day was like.
Yeah.
They come to see a show. You hit that stage, they deserve your fullness. Do not slack on my public.
Yes. And because you give us your fullness,
yes,
we're giving it back for
exactly.
you know? I mean,
exactly.
that's just, that
exactly.
that's it.
Exactly.
Well, I could talk to you all day, but I know you have other things to do, and I so appreciate all this time. Thank you so much, Ben Vereen.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So I'm sure that you heard what I heard. Ben Vereen is who he really is. He's a man who would have every right to be arrogant, to be something of a diva, to be unapproachable. But he is none of these things. He has managed to do something which so few people do, and that is to hold on to his innocence, to his sweetness, to his optimism, to his humanity. He is the person he really is. And it is my hope that when you listen to Ben, you're asking yourself, not if you can be a star, not if you can influence the world, but if you can be who you really are, who you always were, who you are meant to be. For those of us who are old enough to remember a time when we believed we were building a safe, more humane world for ourselves and generations to come, it's hard not to be cynical. Fortunately, there is an antidote to our cynicism. It is Ben Vereen's reimagined version of Hair, which we are lucky enough to have running currently at the Venice Theater in Venice, Florida. For audiences who saw the original, and for those too young to have benefited from the original, this glorious production offers an opportunity to recall what it feels like to put love, creativity, self-expression, the essence of what it means to be human, above all else. Do yourself a favor. Give yourself an opportunity to be hopeful and optimistic, to remember the simple joy of being human. Go see Hair. So now I'm going to play another cut from the wonderful score, another song that will be familiar to you, Good Morning Starshine. I'm going to follow that by my reading of Sharon Leslie's review of Hair. So here now, Good Morning Starshine, and then Sharon's review.
Starshine, the earth says hello, you twinkle above us, we twinkle below. Good morning, starshine, you lead us along, my love and me as we sing our early morning singing song.
Hear ye, hear ye. News of great import is happening at the Venice Theatre. What made the musical Hair the cultural phenomenon of the 1960s has been reawakened. The brave warrior that has given this sleeping beauty the kiss of reimagination is none other than theater icon Ben Vereen. I walked away from last night's performance at the Venice Theater saying to one and all, Hair has become relevant again. For those of you who didn't live through how influential this piece of theater was back in the 60s, how millions were singing the songs and how its message of love with loud anti-war rants invigorated a ready-to-rebel movement, the musical Hair's power has been yawned at. Its message has been watered down. It was relegated to the closet of musical has-beens. But they are wrong. Even though I listened to the cast album in my youth and know most of the words of many of the songs, I was surprised by how impactful this production was. The hippie movement has been made fun of for its drug use and free love, but the parodying fails to give credit to its counter-revolutionary ideals, the ones that galvanized peaceful protests and promoted racial equality. Make love, not war. Could this be more relevant now with 30 million children being displaced by war? With Europe being remade by the Syrian refugee crisis? With this country in the midst of its longest war ever? The daily gun violence, the police brutality, and racial targeting videos? It's hard to watch Hair and not become part of the voice of protest, which is exactly Vereen's goal. Why does this production work? To use a cinematic term, because of the auteur. Vereen has crafted a production that delivers on multiple levels. First of all, the performances, his vision for the characters, their tribal interactions, the overall body language of the cast is spellbinding. Each actor communicates a defined character with a commitment to the needs of the script that's not always found in our professional theater. While all were outstanding, I must mention the superb performance of Charlie Logan as Berger and Aaron Vereen as Hud. The choreography by Gina Ravella feels improvisational, yet it has a specificity of action that celebrates our individuality over robotic precision. The music was beautifully executed with purposeful intent by both the cast and the pit musicians. And let's really celebrate. The music never overwhelms the singer. Woo-hoo! That should put to rest all the excuses I hear in professional and community theaters about sound systems. It's not the sound system. It's the ear of the director. The next level is visually. Theater needs spectacle to be engaging. The multi-level set by Tim Weisgerhoff has a modern look, mixing steel and wood, but is Shakespearean in its ability to supply a great variety of spaces with multiple entrance and exit options. With a cast of over 30 actors who are on stage most of the time, the audience gets the opportunity to watch all sorts of interactions happening, keeping the eye constantly engaged. For something really important, the auteur directs our attention to putting a moment or a song into a spotlight. I had the opportunity to sit in the balcony, so the movement of the tribe coming together and splitting apart made me feel like a general watching a battle unfold. It was quite fascinating. The third level is the transformative level of the production. Today's audiences are used to the multi-level experience of real-time performance enhanced by on-screen projections. Vereen has added a veneer of reality not possible in the 1960s that gives this production a sort of documentary overtone. For example, the parents come on stage and sing about the death of their son killed in action in Vietnam. Flashing behind them is the image of all those crosses at Arlington Cemetery. Here is the vision of Ben Vereen in some ways quite literally. At the conclusion of the show are images that connect with current important issues. Spoiler alert. We see the faces of the children murdered at Sandy Hook Elementary School and images of Columbine High School. Hair is not hair unless it sends out a call to action to protest against the violence in this world and reminds us to love one another. by crafting excellent performances, theatrical visuals, and on-screen commentary, Vereen has made Hair more than a period piece. He has made its message speak to us today. So, if listening to Ben talk about Hair didn't convince you to go right out and get your ticket, then I'm sure Sharon Leslie's review did, and I want to add my encouragement to get your ticket soon because it is selling out. The Lynn Show is all about change, about making your life better. I believe it is possible to change. But as I say in my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It, we seem to believe that when we make a change, the only thing that's going to change is the change we made. But that's blatantly untrue. When we make a significant change, there is always a domino effect, a ripple effect, consequences. And until we are able to endure, tolerate the consequences, it can be very difficult to risk the change. So, if the change you want to make is a change to your personal life, then you might want to read my book, which of course you can find on my website, thelinshow.com. But if the change that you want to make is a change in our world, then go out and see Ben Vereen's Hair. We're going to go out on yet another song from the show, yet another song you will recognize. And in some ways, I think this is a song that speaks to what this play is trying to say. Let the sunshine in. Let the light take the place of the darkness that is so much surrounding us these days. As always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that interested you, intrigued you, made you want to go out and see Hair. Something that'll bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be.
have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten limper, but I won't go with the wind.